Okay, so we are holding on Kofchaf Dalad Omud Beis, about 15 lines or so from the bottom. Line begins Har Rabbi Yehuda, 12 lines from the bottom. And line begins Har Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so we're still in the middle of talking about Mukta. Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Nachman, rather, Hani Livni de Ishtayur Mabinyana, if you have bricks that are left over from a building, so you have the most of the bricks were used for the building, and then you have a few that are left over, Shori L'Taltalinu, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos, D'chazul Mizga Alayu, because you could use them to rest on. You could use those bricks as a makeshift seat or something. So therefore, they're not Mukta. Shaginhu, but if they laid them out in rows, showing that they actually intend to still use them for building, vaday aktinu, then there's no question they obviously designated them for use on Shabbos, which is for use which is mukta on Shabbos, namely that they're going to be using them for building, and therefore now they're mukta again. So not you designated them on Shabbos, but we mean, in other words, then if he did that before Shabbos, then it shows that as of Shabbos, they're designated for another purpose. They're going to be used for another building, and therefore they're mukta. Another din, Amar of Nachman Amar Shmuel, cheres ktana, a small piece of earthenware. So it's too small to be used as a keli by itself, but mutal talta b'chotzer, but you're allowed to, Rav Nachman is saying in the name of Shmuel, that you are allowed to move that piece of earthenware in a chotzer. Aval b'kaimelis loy, but not in kaimelis, because the idea is, in a chotzer, you could still use it as a cover for a keli. So therefore, it's not considered mukta because it still has a function. As opposed to in kaimelis, there's no kelim over there. You can't carry in kaimelis midrabanan, so it's not expected that there's going to be kalim there, and if there are, you're not going to be able to pick up a piece of something and use it to cover it over there. So therefore, Rav Nachman is saying in the name of Shmuel that it'll be mukta in kaimelis. Rav Nachman didei amar afilu b'kaimelis. Rav Nachman himself, now he quoted Shmuel as saying that it's mukta, that's mukta in kaimelis. Rav Nachman himself disagrees and says afilu b'kaimelis, even in kaimelis, it will not be mukta. Rashi says because after all, okay, you're not going to have kalim over there. You're not going to have kalim over there, but you, on the other hand, there could be saliva on the ground over there in kaimelis, which you could use a piece of cheres to cover that, and therefore it's not mukta. That's according to Rashi. Rabbi Hanano gives a different reason. Which is that since it's only drabanan that you're not allowed to carry from Karmelis into Rosh HaYachid, conceivably somebody could carry it into Rosh HaYachid, into the Chotzer, and then you'd be able to use it to cover a keli. So therefore it can't be mukta in Karmelis. Aval Rosh HaRabim loy, but Rav Nachman would say if it was in Rosh HaRabim, then not, either according to Rashi, because you can't be moving it around to cover saliva over there. You could move it within four amos, but there isn't necessarily going to be saliva within four amos to be able to cover it. Or according to Rabbeinu Hanano, because midaraisi, you're not allowed to carry from there into a chotzer, so there's no possibility that you're going to carry it and that it's going to be usable to cover a keli over there. Rava says no. Even in Rosh HaSarabim, you would be able to move that piece of cheres. Rashi says because since it is a keli in the chotzer, you can't consider it not a keli when it's elsewhere. So therefore it may not be usable in Rosh HaSarabim for its purpose of covering a keli or covering saliva, but nevertheless it does still count as a keli, and once it's a keli it can't be more mukta in one place than in another, says Rava. Or Rabbeinu Hanan also has a different reason, because as the Gemara is going to continue now, even in Rosh HaSarabim you could use it to wipe mud off your shoes or something. So the Gemara says Va'azda Rava L'taymei, Rava is going according to his own svara. The Rava have a ka'azel beritka demechoza, beristika, really it's supposed to be. Rava one time was walking in the main street of Mechoza. Itavsoi mesonetina, his shoes became dirty with mud. Also shame, so his servant came, shamesh came, shokochaspa v'chamachaperle. He was taking a broken piece of earthenware that was lying there in the street and was using them to wipe the mud off Rava's shoes. The Rabbanon, the other Chachamim who were there, started yelling at the Shamash not to do that. Because it's Mokhtzeb of Pashtus. Amma, but Rava didn't agree with them. He said, Loi Mistaya Delagmiri, not only these people have not learned what the Torah actually says in this connection, Migma Nami Megamri, they want to teach other people. They want to teach other, they're going to try to teach other people like me what the halacha is. After all, if this piece of earthenware were in the chotzer, it wouldn't be mukta because miloi have a chazia lachasuria b'mana. Wouldn't it have been usable to cover a keli, as we said before? Even Shmuel, we said, agrees with that. Even Shmuel, who says that it's mukta in Kamelus, let alone Rosh Hasharabim, will agree that it's not mukta in the chotzer. So Rava says, hochanami lachazia l'didi. The same way over here, then, it's suitable for me. It's suitable to do things like wiping off my shoes. So therefore, again, it may not be a very common thing, but nevertheless, it is a keli, it has a function, and therefore it can't be mukta over here because it is a keli elsewhere, and even over here it has some kind of function. So according to Rashi, it's focusing on the fact that it is a keli in the chotzer, and therefore it has to be considered a keli over here. According to Rabbi Chananel, focusing on the fact that it actually has a function here in Rosh Hashanah. Good morning, Yaakov. That it actually has a function here in Rosh Hasharabim, namely that it can be used to get mud off his shoes. Now, by the way, when it comes to scraping mud off shoes, it's not always so simple. If you can't scrape the actual surface of the shoe itself, because then you have a problem. It's a tolda of memareach, smoothing out. So we'd have to be talking about that he's just using the earthenware to scrape off like the outer layer of mud or something. And also, there's also a difference whether it's wet mud or dry. But the point is, here he's doing it in a way, the scraping itself, the removing the mud itself, is not the problem of one of the malachas of Shabbos. It was strictly a question of mukta, and therefore, Rava is saying that in fact it's not mukta, and these chachamim who are protesting against it don't know what they're talking about. He says, because in fact it's not mukta because it's not mukta in the chotzer. Okay. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, another din, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, Megufas Chavis Shrikatata, if the stopper of a barrel that was broken up. Now, in those days, the way it worked was you had a barrel, you had these big earthenware barrels or jugs or whatever, you see them sometimes in museums or whatever. They had a fairly narrow opening at the top, relatively speaking, relative to the size of the container, and then there would be a stopper that was also made out of earthenware, but was made to fit that particular barrel. So now, if the barrel itself gets broken up, then the magufa can't really be used to stop up another barrel because it was sized exactly to that one. But nevertheless, mutl the talta b'Shabbos, you're allowed to handle and move it on Shabbos, because you could always use it. You could always use it to cover another keli. You can't use it as a stopper for another. Good morning, Ellie. You can't use it. You're not going to be able to use it as a stopper for another barrel because it's not going to fit. But you are going to be able to use it just to cover, just to put on top of a different keli. Tani nami hachi. We learn similarly in a braisa, magufa shenikatata. If a magufa, a stopper of a barrel like that was broken up, the way where the barrel was broken up, he or shvareha mutal taltal b'Shabbos. You would be allowed to move both the stopper, because you could use it to cover another keli, as well as the broken pieces of the barrel itself, for the same reason, because you could use them to cover another keli. So you'd be allowed to do that. However, the braisa continues, you're not allowed to fix up a broken piece of it, meaning if you have a random shard from that barrel, you're allowed to use it as is to cover up a keli, but you're not allowed to shape it. Like, for example, Rashi says, let's say to break off or smooth down the jagged edges of it or whatever. You can't do that because that would be makav hatish. So you can't do that lachasas baris hakli to make it that then you're going to be able to better cover the keli with it. The lismich bakari amita, or to hold up the leg of a bed with it, you're also not allowed to. because then it, because to do that would be makabe patish. So if you're using the piece of earthenware, the broken piece as is, then fine, it's not muktzah because it has a function. But if you're shaping it or smoothing out the breaking off the jagged edges or whatever, then you have a problem of makabe patish and you can't do that. And the braisa continues, v'im zorka ba'ashpa osir. If you threw this stopper of the barrel or this broken piece of earthenware into the garbage, then it's osir because now it's not considered a keli anymore. Maske for a papa. So the papa says, what do you mean if you throw it in the garbage, then that makes it no longer a keli? Elameata, by that logic, zorek le'glima. Leglime, if a person throws his clothes, if a person throws a piece of clothing of his in the garbage, hachinami da osir, are you going to say that it also becomes osir for him to take it out of the garbage or otherwise to move it? So what if he threw it in the garbage? It still has the same function. It still has the same function as it did before. So elo amar a papa. So rather, a papa says no. What the braisa means is kufachem and aleph. If before Shabbos he had thrown this stopper, the megufa, or the broken piece of earthenware, if he had thrown it into the garbage before Shabbos, then asura, then it would be also on Shabbos because now it's not considered a keli anymore. So Tosafot says, okay, it still doesn't mean though that, and what if you did the same thing with a piece of clothing? And what if you did the same thing with a piece of clothing, if you threw it in the garbage before Shabbos? The difference is because the piece of clothing at least is a real keli. So therefore, so even throwing it in the garbage is not going to change its status. On the other hand, here it's not a real keli after all. A piece of broken earthenware or the stopper of a barrel where the barrel itself broke is not really... It doesn't really have its original function anymore. You're going to be using it for something else. You're going to be using it to cover up another keli or something. But therefore, so throwing it in the garbage before Shabbos is enough to be mevatel it, that now it's not considered a keli anymore. Okay. So that's what the braisa means. Then it would be osir. But if you threw it in the garbage on Shabbos, then you're right. The fact that at the beginning of Shabbos it was still usable as a keli, and you hadn't yet thrown it in the garbage, and you could have used it to cover another keli, even if during Shabbos you throw it in the garbage, then it doesn't matter. You could still take it out of there and continue to use it on Shabbos. And in the case of clothing or another whole keli, it doesn't matter at all. Whenever you throw it in the garbage, it's still considered a keli, and you could take it out of there on Shabbos. Okay. Amar bar hamduri amar Shmuel. Here's another din. Also, little pieces that came off of an old mat are mutter to handle on Shabbos. And the mat itself is usable on Shabbos, obviously, to sit on. But in addition, you can also use it, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, you can use it to cover up things on the ground that you don't want to be seen. So the little strands and whatever that come off the ends of it, also you'd be allowed to move them on Shabbos. My timer, now why? What could you use them for? Amar Rava. So Rava says, Barham Duri Asbarali. Barham Duri explained, the same Barham Duri who said the thing in the name of Shmuel, he also explained to me, Machzelas Gufer Lamai Chazia. After all, the mat itself, when it was whole, what was it suitable for? Now, besides the fact that you could use it to sit on, its purpose, its function was also very similar, also had something else. L'chasuyi be'afra. You could have used it before to cover up dust. What does that mean? Why would you want to cover up dust? So Rashi says two explanations. One is that it means that you can use it, that you can use, you have, for example, dust, which is going to be used to cover tzoya. So you can use, sometime during Shabbos, you pre-designated this dust before Shabbos, that if there's tzoya on the ground, you're going to use the dust to cover it. So you might have a mat on top of the dust to protect it, so it doesn't get tracked all around or whatever. Or Rashi says another reason is just you might spread a mat just in general on the dust in order that it doesn't fly all over the place in the house. Whatever it is, so it has that function. Haninami, well then with the broken off pieces of the mat also, chazim chasoyi bo tinoifus, you could still use them to cover up something filthy on the ground. So therefore they can't be considered mukta. Tosfos says, I mean, we didn't really need to say that. We said before the halacha is like the chachamim in our Mishnah, which we're going to say soon is actually Reb Meir, because Stam Mishnah and Reb Meir, that when you have a broken Cayley, the pieces don't necessarily have to serve the original function. And especially, we said on top of that, on top of that, we said that it depends whether it broke before Shabbos or on Shabbos. But whatever, even if it broke on Shabbos, we said that the halacha is that they don't have to be serving the original function. We said in our Mishnah, for example, you have a tray that's used for kneading. That was used for a wooden tray, that was a wooden bowl, whatever, that was used for kneading, and now is broken, even if the pieces are not, even if the pieces are only usable now to cover up a keli, then that's still not, it's still not considered mukta. Or like we were saying now about a barrel that broke or whatever. So you don't need it to do me'in malachtan rishayna. But nevertheless, okay, we're saying over here that in this case, even stronger, even the opinions that say, even Rabbi Yehuda, who says in our Mishnah that it have to be me'in malachtan rishayna, would agree that over here you can move these shorei machzalos, these leftover, these broken off pieces in the machzalos, because it does have pretty much the same function. Before, you could use the machzalos to cover up a pile of dirt, and now you can also use it to cover up something dirty on the ground, the broken pieces. Okay. With that said, there are Rishonim. I think the Ritva says that. Okay, but on the other hand, there, if you threw it in the garbage, even on Shabbos, then for sure you're not going to say that it wouldn't be mukta. So like we said before, we just said a piece of cheres, not fine. But the difference is a piece of cheres at least has usually more function, and people more usually keep it around than they do a piece of broken off piece of a machzelus. I mean, the truth of the matter is, by the way, we should mention with all of this. Now we're talking about broken kalim. First of all, it's only when it's typical to use broken kalim for some other purpose. Nowadays, it's much less common to do that. Nowadays, you have a broken kalim. Typically, you're just going to throw the whole thing in the trash. So therefore, and you wouldn't usually use it to cover a kalim or whatever. So there's less latitude over there. It might be mukta regardless. Another consideration, by the way, is when we're talking about broken kalim and we're saying they're not mukta, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, if we're talking about something where you plan to fix it, where it's possible to fix it and you plan to, then it would be mukta, because for a different reason, not so much because of mukta, but because then we're concerned that you might end up fixing it on Shabbos. So later on, for example, we're going to have an example in a later perek of, for example, a bench where one leg came off. We're there. The bench is going to be mukta because we don't want you to. Because otherwise, you might forget that it's Shabbos and put the leg back on. But here we're talking about, let's say, for example, an earthenware barrel that broke, or you could think of other similar, a dish that breaks nowadays would be an equivalent of it, or whatever. Where there's no way you're going to fix it. No. But Pashas, it wouldn't matter whether there's someone chacham or they or not. Usually, when we make a gzeira, because you might come to do something, it doesn't. But we'll revisit that topic in the 20th parak, Bez Hashem, when we talk about that din. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Amar Abzeira Amar Rav, another din. Shorei Pruzmiyos also the Talpal and the Shabbos. Torn off pieces, little leftover pieces of a Pruzmiyos, you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos. Prusmias, Rashi says, is another word for talisos. So one second. Omer Abaya says, we're talking about over here, b'matlonius she'en behen gimel al gimel. What we're talking about over here is where the pieces are less than 3x3 etzbois, b'lechazion, lo'la aniyim, b'lo'la ashirim. Now, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, small pieces of cloth, now larger pieces, 3x3 tefachim or more, even rich people would use them, because they could use them, for example, to put on a chair to sit on it. 3x3 etzbois, rich people won't use them, but poor people will, as a patch for their clothing. Less than 3x3 etzbos, even poor people aren't going to use them. So therefore, they don't really have a function, therefore they're mukta. Apparently not. You wouldn't use, yeah, for a small tear in clothing, you wouldn't use a patch less than 3x3. Now, you have some of the Rishonim learn, the Ravid in particular, and some of the Mephoshim explained that maybe Rashi would also agree with this, that we're talking specifically where the piece comes from a talis shal mitzvah, not just a talis. The word talis in the Gemara doesn't always mean a talis like the kind we wear for shachris, but rather it means more generally a piece of clothing, but an outer wrap or something. But those Rishonim, the Ravid and others, say that no, here we're talking specifically a talis shal mitzvah, and the idea is because now a piece smaller than 3x3. We just said, for example, in the case of a mat, a broken off piece of a mat, conceivably you could use it to cover something dirty on the ground. But if it comes from a talus shel mitzvah, you're not going to do that because it's going to be a bizoyan for it. It came from a talus shel mitzvah, and now you're going to do it for that. But if we were talking about it was from a regular piece of clothing, then they say it wouldn't matter and it wouldn't be muktzah even smaller than that, because the same way you could use it to cover something dirty on the, a little piece of tzoya or whatever on the ground. Other rishonim disagree with that and say that no, either way it doesn't matter. Cloth is different. You're not really going to be using cloth to cover things on the ground. Both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch. So you have two opinions in Shulchan Aruch whether a tiny piece of cloth like that is muktzah or not. Well, it wouldn't be for a big piece of earth, obviously, but it could be. If, let's say, there's a small bit of spit or soya or whatever on the ground you might want to use to cover it. So again, according to some Rishonim, it doesn't matter. Cloth, you're not really going to use for that purpose, therefore it would be muktzah. According to the Ravid, cloth from a regular piece of clothing, you would be allowed to, only if it was from a talus shel mitzvah, then you wouldn't. Okay. But if it's 3x3, then it's not muktzah either way, because 3x3 etzbayos already, you can use for a patch, so therefore it's considered a functional keli. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, Shivrei Tanu Yoshen, broken pieces of an old oven. Now the way it works is like this. An oven in those days was made sort of like an upside down cup. Like if you think of like one of our disposable cups nowadays, imagine like you cut off the bottom of the cup, so you have a hollow thing that's open on the top and the bottom. It's a little narrower on the top than it is on the bottom. It was made out of earthenware. It was made out of clay. The normal way they would use it is they would put it on the ground. They would smear a layer of clay where it touches the ground and also all around the oven in order that it should retain its heat. And then they would fire it up. And the first time you fire it up, it hardens the earth, it hardens the clay and makes it into a functional keli. And then from now on, you use it to bake bread or whatever. So broken pieces of an old oven, old meaning that it was already fired up at least once. Harein kecholak kelim, and he told him b'chotzer. Divrei Rav Meir says they're like any other kelim that can be moved in the chotzer. Or actually, Tosfos says really according to Rav Nachman, it would be only in the chotzer. Again, we had before, or according to Shmuel, rather, it would be only in the chotzer. According to Rav Nachman or Rava, also in Karmelis and also in Rosh Hashanah. But the point is, in other words, they're like broken pieces of any other earthenware keli. Divrei Rav Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ein Nitalin. Rabbi Yehuda says they can't be moved. Now we're going to have to figure out why. Hayed Rabbi Yosi Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Yosi gave Eidus in front of the Chachamim in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov al Shivre Tanu Yoshin Shnei Talin b'Shabbos, that the broken pieces of an old oven can be moved on Shabbos, like Rabbi Meir. The Alkisuya Sheinet Tzorach Beis Yad. Also, by the way, Rabbi Yosi also gave Eidus in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov on another din that the lid of the oven is allowed to be moved on Shabbos even if it doesn't have a handle. They used to have in those days. Now the oven has a hole on the top for the smoke and whatever to go out. But sometimes you would put a lid on top of the oven to keep the smoke or whatever inside, I guess. So some of those lids had handles. Some of them don't. The point is that even if the lid doesn't have a handle, now we're gonna have later on in our perek, the last mishnah of our perek, we're gonna discuss the question of what is the din when you have a keli attached to the ground, as a tanur normally is. If that keli that's attached to the ground has a lid, are you allowed to move that lid on Shabbos only if it has a handle, or whether it has a handle or not? Would it be considered like boina if it doesn't have a handle? Then it might be like boina to put it on or take it off on Shabbos. We'll be dealing with that at the end of the perek, Be'ez Hashem. No, not to make the handle. Obviously, making the handle would be makav patesh or bono or what have you. No, what we mean is to actually put the lid on it, to put the lid on it to cover it on Shabbos, or to take it off, would be bono or so, as the case may be, if it has no handle. If it has a handle, then it's clear that it's a cover of a keli. But we're going to discuss that point. We're going to discuss that point at the very end of the perek, so we'll do it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosi is saying in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, when it comes to an oven, it doesn't matter whether it has a handle or not. You're allowed to move the lid. But okay, let's focus on the first machlokes, where we're saying the broken pieces of the oven, whether you're allowed to move them on Shabbos, according to the mayor, or not, according to the Yehuda. So what's going on? What is the underlying machlokes? The machlokes is on a similar topic as our Mishnah, whether you have a situation where the broken pieces have a function, but it's not the same function as it was before. So that would be the machlokes. So why are we arguing dafka on an old oven? Because a new oven, for sure, the pieces, because it hasn't even been fired up yet, the pieces, the broken pieces of it are not really useful for anything. But once it was fired up and the clay is hard, like any other earthenware, then we're saying you could use it to cover a keli, like we said before. But that's not similar to the original function of the oven, because the original function of the oven was to cook or bake food. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are going according to their respective svaras. The same way as in our Mishnah, with, for example, a kneading bowl, where Rabbi Meir says, or the Tanakama of our Mishnah, which is a mayor, says it's good enough to be able to move the pieces on Shabbos as long as you can use them, let's say, to cover a barrel, a large keli like a barrel. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, only if it's something similar to the original function. So, for example, dough has a thick consistency, so it would have to be that the piece is large enough and curved enough or whatever to be able to put in it mikpah, which is a kind of thick porridge. Then only then would it not be mukta. So the same thing over here. If they're broken off pieces of an oven, so Rabbi Yehuda would require that they have to be useful for something similar to the purpose of the original oven, namely to cook or bake on. And therefore, if not, then they're mukta. And Rabbi Meir says, it doesn't matter. As long as they have some function, then they're not mukta. But maskifla Rava. But Rava says, I have a problem with that explanation. If so, why would the Tanoim be arguing about the broken pieces of an oven, they can be arguing about the broken pieces of any kelim. Why? What's special about an oven that we're mentioning it? So Rava says, no, you have to realize we're not talking about a regular kind of oven. We're talking about a specific case involving an oven that's mentioned in a Mishnah and Kalim. The Tanan, we learn like this. Typically what you do with an oven is you put it on the ground and you smear some clay around the bottom of it in order to hold it tightly to the ground. But instead you could have nosne al pi abur oy al pi adus. You could have where you put the oven on top of a pit in the ground or on top of a dus. A dus is also like a well or a pit or something. The difference is it's built above ground. So a bur is a hole dug into the ground. A dus is like where you make an enclosure with a few rows of bricks or something above ground, and you would use it, let's say, to store water or whatever. Anyway, let's say you put the oven on top of that. So the bottom of the oven, so now remember, the bottom of the oven usually is open, and usually you'd put the firewood for the oven on the ground at the bottom of the, underneath the oven. So you'd have the oven is going to be sitting on the ground. You have a hole near the bottom over there where you would stick in the firewood. Here instead, you're going to be putting the firewood at the bottom of the hole, at the bottom of the burr, at the bottom of the dus, a couple of feet below the bottom of the oven itself. So what if you did that? Vinosan shan evan. Now, what if you had to put a stone over there to hold the oven in place? Meaning, now you could have, let's say, for example, the burr is larger than the oven. So if you were to just put the oven into the burr, it would fall all the way to the bottom. So what do you do in order to hold it in place? What you do is you take a stone and wedge it in one place between the edge of the pit and the edge of the edge of the tanner in order to help hold it in place. So all around the rest of it, you have around a good part of it, you have a space. You have, let's say, the oven is. So now the oven is, let's say, so one end of it is pressed against one wall of the burr. The other end, the other 180 degrees away from there, you have a stone that's wedged into place to hold it in place, so it doesn't fall into the burr. And all around the sides, on one side and on the other, you have this open space over there. Now, the problem with that kind of open space is if it's large enough, then the heat from the fire is not enough of it is going to go into the oven. You're not really going to be able to, the heat is all going to dissipate into the air, and you're not going to be able to use the oven effectively. So, well, let's say, for example, first of all, you could put the wood in beforehand. You could put the wood in beforehand, let's say, before you put the oven there. But you could also have, let's say, where you have another hole dug in to the burr from the side, or in the case of the deuce, it's above ground. You could have an opening in the side of it anyway, where you can stick in the firewood. Right. Well, but it doesn't have to. That's the point. We're going to say soon that it could be you just did this temporarily. But anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda, im masik milamata v'hu nisik milamayla, if the space between the oven and the lip of the burr is small enough that if you fire up the oven underneath, you put the firewood underneath at the bottom of the burr, and the oven itself will get hot enough to be able to bake or cook it, then tomei, then the oven is makabel tuma, the imlav tahar. If not, then it's tahar. Then it's not makabel tuma. Meaning, so now there's two possibilities. Rashi describes how that could be. One possibility is, again, we said that the cases we're talking about over here where the burr is a little bit larger than the oven, so therefore you're putting in a large rock in order to you're wedging in a large rock to fill in the space in at least one place so that it stays up. So one possibility could be where the space between them is much smaller. You only need a small rock for that purpose. So therefore, around the whole rest of the burr, the space between the walls of the burr and the walls of the oven is much smaller, and therefore very little heat goes out through there. Most of the heat will go up into the oven, and therefore it'll get hot enough. Or the other possibility, Rashi says, you might not even need a stone at all. You might have that the burr, let's say, is shaped. It narrows towards the bottom, let's say, such that when you put the oven in on top of it, so at some point it'll stop. It won't go all the way down to the bottom of the burr. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying that now we have like this. The Torah tells us an oven can be makabel tuma. The Torah also tells us that if an oven, an earthenware oven, is makabel tuma, then the only way to there's no way to make it tahor. You can't put it in a mikveh or whatever, klei cheres. You can't. The only thing you can do is break it. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, that only an oven that requires breaking, meaning that it's attached to the ground like a normal oven and now needs to be detached from the ground, only that kind is makabel tuma. Here where Rabbi Yehuda would say, so if it's attached, if you have in any of the last two cases where the space between the burr and the edge of the oven is very small and you only need a small stone to help hold it in place, and therefore you have very little space around it for the heat to go out, fine, we can consider that like a regular oven. All you have, then fine, the burr underneath is considered an extension of the oven. Or if you had no space at all and the burr was narrower towards the bottom, and therefore you put in the oven and it stays someplace on along the walls of the burr, then fine, the oven can be considered a normal oven, even if it's not attached to the ground per se, but still it's placed in a sort of permanent way on the ground. But if you have that the space between the edges of the burr and the oven was so large that where you're going to be putting stones to hold it up, you need large stones. So then what's going to happen is, in other words, when you burn the firewood at the bottom of the pit over there, not enough of the heat is going to even get into the oven to cook. Then you can't consider that oven that it needs netitza. You can't consider that oven that it needs to be broken off, because in effect it's not really functioning as an oven yet, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says it's not makabel tuma. Whereas the Chum say, either way, the fact is it was fired up, even if it doesn't get fired up enough to cook in, the fact is it was fired up in this state, and therefore be makabel tuma. So we're going to get back to later on what this has to do with Hilchos Shabbos. Why then we'd be talking about the broken pieces of the oven? But first, we're going to analyze why Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue why Rabbi Yehuda and Rameyer have their respective opinions. Then after that, we'll get back to how that's relevant to Hilchos Shabbos. An oven that's attached to the ground is makabel tuma, and that's actually an exception to the rule. Usually, kalim attached to the ground are not, usually things attached to the ground are not makabel tuma. A house, for example, is not makabel tuma. Gzeiras hakosev, that an oven which normally is attached to the ground is makabel tuma. So again, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying that it has to be either, it doesn't have to be completely attached to the ground, fine, but it does have to be at least placed on top of this burr in such a way that enough of the heat from the bottom of the burr will go into the oven to actually be useful for cooking or baking, whereas the Chacham say it doesn't matter. So, what is the underlying argument? Bahaikra, they're arguing about the meaning of the following pasuk. The pasuk says in Parashas Shmini, Tanur v'chirayim yutrat, an oven or stove, if they became tamei, which are made out of earthenware, if they became tamei, yutrat, they have to be broken because they can't be, you can't make them tahor in a mikvah. Tmeim heim or tmeim yiyu lachem. They are tamei and they shall be tamei for you. We'll see in a second what those words in the pasuk are coming to teach us. So Rabbi Yehuda Safa, Mechosin Tzitzit Tamei. So Rabbi Yehuda holds only an oven which requires breaking where it's attached to the ground, or at least semi-attached to the ground, where therefore, in other words, you need to break it, you need to remove it from where it is right now. Right now, it's in a place, either it's attached directly to the ground as normal ovens are, or it's on the burr in such a way where enough of the heat from the burr comes up into the oven, where therefore you could leave it that way, and now you're having to remove it from there and break it. Only then that kind is makabel truma. She'ein mechotzer netitza tahor. But over here, it's not really. It doesn't. Netitza. Okay. So actually, Rashi explains like this. The word netitza, the shortish nosatz nun tof tzadik, refers to breaking down a building, something that's attached to the ground. To break something that it's not attached to the ground. The word for it in Lashon Kodesh is shavar. So therefore, if the pasuk is saying nosatz, if the pasuk is saying kind of a chayim yutatz, which is from the shodesh notatz, then it implies that it has to be attached to the ground. So Rabbi Yehuda would say, if it's attached to the ground like a regular oven, then the word netitza applies to it. Also, if it's placed on the burr in such a way that the heat from the bottom of the burr will come up into it, and you could leave it, you could use the oven all the time that way, then also we can consider it attached to the ground, and therefore you'd have to detach it, and therefore netitza applies. But if it was placed, if the burr is so large that you need a big rock to hold the oven in place, to wedge in between the edge of the burr and the oven, and therefore there's so much space around the other parts of the burr that the heat is just going to go up through there instead of into the oven, you're not going to use the oven that way, and therefore it can't, or the oven is not really attached to the ground that way. It's not really functionally attached to the ground. Therefore, you can't say that the word netitza applies to it, and therefore it's not makabel truma, because only an oven to which netitza applies, that it's attached to the ground, is makabel truma, says Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbanan say no, but the pasuk continues, tmeim yulachem, they will be tomei for you, meaning regardless whether it's attached to the ground or not. They're saying, in other words, the fact that it says yutatz doesn't necessarily mean it has to be attached to the ground. So the question is, v'rabbanan nami haksiv yutatz. Okay, what are the chachamim doing with the word yutatz? The answer is, ha'hula idach gisa. They're saying that word is coming to tell us exactly the opposite of what Rabbi Yehuda wants from it. Rabbi Yehuda is saying the word yutatz is a kula. He's saying that like this, the pasuk is telling us that only if the oven is made in such a way that it can be considered attached to the ground, and now you have to detach it from the ground, then it's makabel truma. But if not, then not. Like in this case, where you have a large space between it and the bottom of the burr, and between it and the sides of the burr, so all the heat escapes through those sides, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying the pasuk is implying to be makel, and that's not considered an oven, which is makabel truma. The Chum said just the other way around. The word yutatz is coming to teach us a chumra, which otherwise we wouldn't have realized. The Sakhudai de Chamina, without the word yutatz, you would have thought, kiven de chabre ba'ara, that since the oven was attached to the ground, kigufa de ara damya, it should be considered like the actual ground itself, which the ground is not makabel truma. And again, like we said before, for example, a house is not makabel truma. You would have thought, when an oven is attached to the ground, how can it be makabel truma? It's attached to the ground. It should be bottled to the ground. So the word yutatz is just the opposite as what Rabbi Yehuda says. Not that only if it requires netitza is it makabel truma. Just the opposite. If it doesn't require netitza, if it's not attached to the ground, there's no chiddush that it's makabel truma. Sure, any kli cheres is makabel truma. But even if it's attached to the ground, and now detaching it from the ground can be described by the word yutatz, it's still makabel truma. So that's what
it means. A house that has charas is makabel truma, and it's still attached to the ground.
That's true. A house that has saras is makabel. Fine, but that's a special case. We're talking about, for example, tumas. This pasuk over here, talking about the tumah of an oven, is talking about, for example, tumas sheretz. Similar concepts apply to tumas mes. So those kinds of trumas, something that normally a house or anything else attached to the ground, is not makabel truma. So the pasuk needs to stress that an oven is not like that. An oven is makabel truma, even trumas sheretz or whatever, even though it's attached to the ground.
It's because there's a pasuk that says
the word yurtatz is from the shodesh notatz, which means to detach from the ground.
No, I understand. But for a house that has tsaras, where do we know that it's makabel truma?
Because the pasuk says that a house that has tsaras becomes tameh, and and the house itself may need to be torn down, and the stones of it are tameh or whatever, because the psukim say so. But we can't generalize from that to other kinds of truma. Truma tsaras is a special thing of its own. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. So Kamash Malan, so therefore the Pasuk needs to tell us with the word Yurtatz that an oven is an exception to the general rule, even though it's attached to the ground, it's Makabal Truma. So the question is now, what about Rabbi Yehuda? V'idach nami haksiv tmeim yulachem. What about according to Rabbi Yehuda, what does he do with the word tmeim yulachem, which the Chachamim again are saying means that the oven is Makabal Truma regardless whether it's attached to the ground or not? The answer is, ha'hikid Rabbi Yehuda amashmur. Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, would understand that, like Rabbi Yehuda, the Amora says in the name of Shmuel, the Amor of Yehuda, Amor Shmuel, Machloikas Behesik Rishon. The whole Machloikas we're talking about over here is the first time that the oven is fired up, which again, like we said before, that accomplishes that now the clay of the oven becomes hard and becomes usable as an oven. So that would be the machlokas, whether it has to be done in a way where enough of the heat goes into the oven to be able to cook and bake in or not. Aval behesek shady, but when it comes to after it was heated up the first time, and now it's already been made. So let's say it was originally attached to the ground, or it was placed on top of a thick rock or something, and then so it was fired up in the normal way. Then, after that, at that point the oven is makabel truma, even if now you have it hanging from the neck of a camel, even so it's not attached to the ground at all. But and it's even high up off the ground, Rabbi Yehuda would say that's what the words Tmei Miulachem come to teach us, that even then that oven is still Makabel Truma. So Rabbi Yehuda would say Tmei Miulachem means that in that case, since it was already made into a functional oven when it was attached to the ground or when it was on top of a burr with a small stone or whatever, like we said before, then therefore it retains that status even if now you took it off, you took it out of the burr completely and hung it from the neck of a camel. So it means, in other words, the Chachamim, who don't agree with Rabbi Yehuda on the case of the burr, so they would say, even when it comes to the first firing, afilu tole b'tzaver gomel, then it would be makabel truma, even if it was on the neck, even if it was hanging from the neck of a camel. So according to the Chachamim, in other words, there's no difference that wherever the oven was when it was fired up the first time, it's still makabel truma, and you have the word yurtatz in the pasuk to tell us a chiddush that even if it was attached to the ground, where normally kalim are not makabel truma when they're attached to the ground, but here it is. Here it is. It's only you, in order to be mitahir it, you would have to break it. And Rabbi Yehuda would say that Tmeim Yulachem is teaching us about the second time only, but the first time it does have to be attached to the ground because of Yurtatz. So the point is, so now that we understand that machlokas, so therefore we can talk about the question of the broken piece of it. So now again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it wasn't attached to the ground the first time, then it's not yet considered a keli. Therefore, the broken pieces of it are not going to be considered kelim either. Therefore, you can't move them on Shabbos. Whereas according to the mayor, which is the same as the Chachamim, it is considered an oven and it is makabel truma no matter where you fired it up, even if it was hanging from the neck of a camel. Therefore, the broken pieces of it can also be considered kalim, and therefore you can move them on Shabbos. Okay. However, maskif lo ravashi, ihochi, if that's the explanation, ad miflugi b'shivrei tanur, instead of them arguing about the broken pieces of the oven, lift the gubatanu gufa, then they should just be arguing about the oven itself. The oven itself, you could ask hash the tanu gufa little Yehuda, like have a mana. If you're telling me that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the oven itself is not considered a keli, shvar of miboya, would you need to say that even the broken pieces of it are not? The Brice, I could have just mentioned, in other words, the machloikas is, the oven itself, the oven itself, if you the oven itself, is it muktzah on Shabbos or is it not? Rabbi Meir would say that no. Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of a heel, where the first time that it was fired up, it was on top of the burr, on top of the drus. So Rabbi Meir would say it's already considered a keli because we don't care where it was fired up as long as it was done. And Rabbi Yehuda would say it has to dafka be where it was attached to the ground. So you could have the machlokas could have been presented about that. It doesn't have to be about the broken pieces of it. Well, it's because according to the mayor, we're saying that since it says Tmeim Yulachem, then it means the oven is Makabel Truma once it's fired up, regardless where it was when it was fired up. Whereas according to the Yehuda, because he focuses on the word Yurtats, he says that it means that it has to actually be attached to the ground the first time. That's what we're saying. But sort of Ashi is asking, fine, but in that case, then the original Braisa that we quoted, instead of Shivrei Tanu Yoshan, it could have just mentioned Tanu Yoshan, an old oven. And then the Machloikas would be about that itself. So Rav Ashi says, after all, let's go back to our original understanding. We are actually talking about the case, the machloikas is based on the machloikas in our Mishnah, that whether the pieces still serve their original function or not. The case is where the broken pieces are still able to be used like you would use a tile or a brick or something, where you're able to use that. You're able to light a fire underneath it and cook or bake something on top of it because enough heat will come through the piece of earthenware. So you're going to lay out the piece of earthenware flat, and you're going to put something for firewood underneath it, and then you're going to try to cook something on top of it. So now you have the machlokas. But a mayor the dvar of the Rabbi Yehuda comma. So when a mayor is saying that it's not mukta, he's saying according to the mayor. He's saying according to Rabbi Yehuda. He's saying like this, Liddy D, as far as I'm concerned, like it said in our Mishnah, I feel a bit, it's in Ma'in Malacha. Then even if, as long as the pieces have some kind of function, even if it's not Oysa Maisa Tapka, even if the only thing you could use this broken piece for is to cover a keli, as far as I'm concerned, that would be considered enough to be considered it has a function and it's not Muktzah on Shabbos. Ela Liddy Doch, but according to you, who say that it has to be Ma'in Malachton, that it has to be similar to the original Malacha, and you're going to say, therefore, that a piece from an oven is not Oysa Ma'in Malachton if you're only using it to cover a keli, it would have to be that you could use it to cook with, but here you can use it to cook with. Then you should at least agree in this case that it is considered, it does serve sort of the same malacha purpose, and because before you were using it to cook and bake, and now you can also use it to cook and bake, and therefore it shouldn't be mukta. And Rabbi Yehuda says, still, I disagree. Loy dummy, because it says not the same thing. Hasam has seikim b'mifnim, hocha has seikim b'mechutz. First of all, when it was part of a complete oven, where was the fire placed for the oven? Inside the oven. Now, instead of here, where are you putting the fire? On the outside of it. Because you have the pieces laying out over here, and you're putting the fire underneath it, and you're cooking the food on top of it. So before, the fire and the food were on the same side. They were both inside the oven. Now, the fire is underneath, the food is on top of it. So they're on different sides. There's something in between them, so it's not right. Well, like the piece of earthenware. So therefore, it's not the same thing. Also, hosam umud, hochalav umud. Also, over there, the oven was shaped like this. It was vertical, like we said before, like a cup, for example. So therefore, it was like that. So that when you put the bread on the side of it, for example, the bread was hanging vertically on the side. Over here, if you're going to bake bread on it, it's going to be laying horizontally on the surface. So therefore, it's not the same thing. So Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, no, Rabbi Meir, I can't agree that would be oisin me'in malachton. It has to be that the way you're using it now would be similar to the way you were using it as an oven. It's not just good enough that you use that before you were using it for cooking and baking, and now you're also using it for cooking and baking. No, it has to be more than that. It has to be that it's used in the same position, and in the same thing with the oven, with the fire and the food on the same side of it. And here you don't have that. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Heyed Rab Yosi Mishum Rab Lazar, not in the Mishnah, in the Braisa rather, we said, Heyed Rab Yosi Mishum Rab Lazar ben Yaakov, Al Shivri Tanu Yoshan Shani Tolan B'Shabbos. We said, broken pieces of an oven, you're allowed to move on Shabbos, like a mayor. And also, Val Kisuya Shain and Sodaf Beis Yad. We also mentioned that he said that the lid of the oven, you're allowed to move, and you're allowed to put back, and you're allowed to move, even if it doesn't have a handle. So Omer Ravina, command metal to linen, ha idna, kisuri, tanuri, the mosa machasia, the ainla and base achiza. So who do we follow nowadays, says Ravina, when we move the covers of ovens in mosa machasia, which is the name of a city in Babel, the ainla and base achiza, where those covers, those lids don't have handles, command, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. That is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that it's mutar to do that. Now we actually have, when we learn at the end of the perek about this topic, we're going to learn that Rabbi Yossi said Edus in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, but Rabbi Yossi himself actually holds that way as well. He was giving Edus to strengthen his own position. The reason why we're stressing over here that it's like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Tosfa says, because we have a concept called Mishnas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Kav Venaki, that there's very little, relatively speaking, from Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in Mishnayos and Braises, but when there is, that halacha is like him. So therefore, we want to mention it's kav, it's a small amount, but for Naki, it's clean, because the halacha is almost always like him, and therefore the Gemara wanted to mention that this is another one of those examples where the halacha is like him. Okay. Mishnah says, Eben Sheba Kiruya, a stone that's inside a kiruya. A kiruya, Rashi explains, is a hollow pumpkin shell. Now, they used to use those in those days for drawing water. Once they emptied out the flesh of the pumpkin, then they would use the shell to draw water. The problem is that a pumpkin shell is very light. And if you put it down, if you lower it down into the water, it's going to float on the water. It's not going to go down into the water and get filled up. So what they would do is they would put a stone inside it to make it heavy. So the Mishnah says, if the stone is attached tightly to the kiruya, so that when you're drawing water, that stone doesn't fall out, mimalinba, then you're allowed to fill up with that kiruya on Shabbos, because not muktzah, because now the stone becomes, in effect, part of the keli. V'im lav, and mimalinba, if not, then not only you're not allowed to move the stone on Shabbos, but the kiruya itself is muktzah, because the boss is the davar also. So there, because the stone itself is muktzah. Continues the Mishnah. A branch of a vine, she kshura b'tafiach, which is tied to a jug that's also used to draw water. Mimalan baba Shabbos, you're allowed to fill up using that jug and using that branch on Shabbos, because you've made that branch into a keli, like a fishing rod, sort of. Yeah, we're gonna discuss in the Gemara. Are we talking about the branch is still attached to the vine? Is it detached? Why exactly would it need to be tied on in order to be used? So we'll deal with that in the Gemara. Another din, a window shade or something that you use to close the window. If it's tied on a string, And it's hanging, in other words, that the string is not, the rope is not long enough for it to reach the ground, so it hangs along the wall until you need to pick it up and use it to close the window. Then you would be allowed to close the window with it on Shabbos. If not, then you wouldn't be allowed to. Not so much because of the dinim of muktzah, but because the problem is that then Rabbi Eliezer is saying that if you put it into the window and it's not kosher v'tolui, then the problem is that it's like building on Shabbos. You're adding to the oihel, you had an open window. We're not talking about like nowadays you have glass windows. We're talking about a window in those days was an open hole in the wall, and you're using this pekach to close it. So the problem is, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, if the pekach is kosher v'tolui, then it's showing that it's like a keli or something, and therefore putting it in the window is not considered boneh. But otherwise, it's just a plain wooden board, basically, and therefore it's like boneh on Shabbos. Like you're adding another board to the house on Shabbos. By the Chum say, either way, you're allowed to close the window with it on Shabbos. So we're going to see in the Gemara. We're going to see in the Gemara what exactly the Chachamim are saying. Is it good enough? Does it actually need to be tied? What if it was just a loose piece that's lying on the ground? Do you need to have pre-designated it before Shabbos? We'll deal with all of that in the Gemara. We'll deal with all of that in the Gemara tomorrow, Rav Hashem. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tnan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah later on in our Masechta in the 21st Perek. Evan Shalpia Chavis. If you have a stone on top of a barrel of wine or whatever, Mata al Tzidah Behine Feles. What you can do is, if you want to get wine out of the barrel on Shabbos, you can tilt the barrel to one side, and that way the stone falls off. The stone itself is mukta, so you can't pick it up off the barrel, but you're allowed to tilt the barrel and make it fall off. We're going to talk about it in a second. And the Mishnah continues. There's another case over there. What would happen? Rashi quotes from the continuation of the Mishnah. What happens if the barrel is between a bunch of other barrels? Now, if you tilt the barrel and the stone falls off, the problem is it's going to bang into another barrel and break it. So what are you allowed to do then? The Mishnah says you're allowed to pick up the barrel that has the stone on top of it and carry it someplace else and then tilt it and then make a stone fall off. So, Amar Rabba, Amar Rab Ami, Amar Rab Yechanan, Lo Shonu Ela B'Sheicheach. That din would apply only if you forgot the stone on there before Shabbos. Avo b'aniach, but if you put the stone on there deliberately before Shabbos, nasa bosses the davar. Also, then the problem is that the problem is that just the opposite. The barrel is a bosses the davar. Also, so now you're not going to be allowed to pick up that barrel and move it someplace else. If you deliberately place the stone on top of there before Shabbos, then the barrel itself becomes a bosses the davar also. So because shecheyach, because you forgot it there before Shabbos. Yeah. So if you forgot it there, then fine. You're allowed to, yeah, Rebbe Akiva Eger talks about a long thing that according to Rashi, we might say that the first din in the Mishnah applies regardless, that you'd be allowed to tilt the barrel to make the stone fall off. Maybe that would apply even if you deliberately left the stone there, because fine, you're only tilting the barrel, you're not actually moving it out of its place. But to pick it up and carry it someplace else and make the stone fall off, that you can't do if the barrel is bosses the double also. Anyway, so that's... Yeah, but it can still be a bosses of davar also, because the fact is you put something muktz on it deliberately before Shabbos. Yeah. So that's according to Rabba. V'Rabbi Yosef Amar Rab Asi Amar Rab Yechanan. Now, so Rabba had said his in the name of Rab Ami in the name of Rab Yechanan. Rabbi Yosef is saying his in the name of Rab Asi, who was another Talmud of Rab Yechanan, in the name of Rab Yechanan. Lo Shonu Ela B'Sheicheach. That the other way around. That Mishnah is talking about where you forgot the stone on there on Shabbos. That's when we're saying you can't pick up the stone itself. You have to tilt the barrel or pick up the barrel and move it someplace else and tilt it. But if you left the stone on there deliberately, just the opposite, Nasir Kisui L'Hachavis, that stone becomes a cover for the barrel, and therefore you'd be allowed to pick up the stone itself on Shabbos. Okay. Amar Rabba, so Rabba says, now again, Rabba's version of it is that there's no way you're ever allowed to pick up the stone on Shabbos. Either you can't move anything at all if the barrel is a bosses the davar also, if you put it there deliberately before Shabbos, or you can tilt the barrel and make the stone fall off if you forgot it there, but you can never move the stone itself. So Amar Rabba, Moisvinen Ashmaitin. Now we pointed out when we learned this, we pointed out there seems to be a contradiction to the statement from our Mishnah over here. We're saying in our Mishnah, Ha'evin Shebakiruya, that a stone that's in the pumpkin shell, in the Malin Baba Enenefelis, if you're able to fill up water with the pumpkin shell and the stone doesn't fall out, because the stone is attached tightly to the Kiruya, Mimalin Baba, then you're allowed to fill up with it on Shabbos. So therefore, so we see that once you made that, so we see the stone can be made a Keli. So why should it be any different with the barrel? But in fact, it's not correct. And in fact, it's so Rabbi is saying, not that I had the question, but we in the yeshiva, when I learned this, they brought up the question that doesn't contradict our Mishnah. But Rabbi says, Valoihi, actually, it's not so. In fact, there's no contradiction. Hossam, in that case, Kivin Dahadka, because he attached it, he tied it carefully to the Keruya. So therefore, Shabya Dofen. He made it, in effect, now it's like a wall, it's like part of the wall of the Keruya. Whereas over here, he didn't attach it; he just put it on top of the barrel. There's not really a mice involved, so therefore, that's not enough to make it into a keli. Just placing it on top there, having in mind that it's going to be a cover for the barrel, is not enough, says Rabba, to make it a keli. No, a stone is a stone. You would have to do some kind of mice at it in order to make it into it. Okay. Rabbi Yosef also says that they brought up a contradiction with his version of the Shmua. Again, his version was that there is a case where you could move the stone, namely if you deliberately placed it there before Shabbos, intending to serve as a cover. So just the fact that you did that is enough to make it considered a keli. So again, they brought up in the yeshiva a contradiction to what I'm saying. because the Mishnah continues, Imlav ein mamalinva. We said if when you fill up with the keruya, the stone falls out, then you can't fill up with it on Shabbos, meaning that the stone is still mukza. So we don't say, even though you designated the stone before Shabbos to weigh down the keruya, you still can't. So how over here does it help to designate the stone? And again, the loyhi, but actually it's not so. It's not a valid contradiction. Hossam kiven de loyhadka, because in just the opposite, in the case of the keruya, you can't use it without the stone being attached, because the stone is going to flow is going to float right out. So if you didn't attach it, if you didn't tie it on, then it shows you didn't mean to make it a keli. But so kivin lehadka, but tuli batla, he was actually mevatalut from being a keli, as opposed to a cover of a chavis. You don't need anything else other than placing it on there to make it a cover. So again, according to Rabba, you need an actual maise in order to make it into a cover. And according to Rabbi Yosef, you don't need an actual maise, it's just enough to designate it. Whereas when it comes to the Kiruya of our Mishnah, there you need to have it attached, because there you need to have it attached. And if you do, then according to Rabba, that's good enough, and it's not, you have a maise. And according to Rabbi Yosef, if you didn't attach it, then the problem is it's anyway going to float away as you fill up the water, so therefore it can't be considered. So therefore you demonstrated that you're not considering a keli by not tying it. So therefore, would be mukta, and the keruya itself would be mukta as a basa sadava also. In other words, again, so you have there's the case where it's attached to the keli, or where it's deliberately not attached, or you have in the case of the chavis as an in between case where it doesn't need to be attached because there's nothing you need to do to the stone specifically in order to make it into a cover for a barrel, and that's where Rabba and Rabbi Yosef are. So the Gemara says, "V'ozdu l'time ma'ayu." So, b'mayikum. What's the underlying machlokas? Mar sava be'in and ma'iso, mar sava lo be'in and ma'iso. Rabba says, if you want to make a stone not mukta, you need to do an actual ma'iso to it. You need, for example, to smooth it or shape it or otherwise make it. But now you're making it's not a regular stone that you're going to from now on be using it as a cover. And Rabbi Yosef says you don't need that; just designating it is enough. So the Gemara says, "V'ozdu l'time ma'ayu." Rab Ami and Rab Asi, remember Rabba and Rab Yosef are quoting Rab Ami and Rab Ami respectively, they are going according to their own respective shittas. The Kiosid of Dimi Omer of Chanina, when Rab Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said in the name of Rab Chanina, but Ami la Omer of Zera Omer of Chanina, another version is Rab Zera said it in the name of Rab Chanina. Pa machas holach Rebbe the Makam Echad, one time Rebbe came to a certain place, Umotza Nidbach Shalavonim. He found a row of bricks over there. Now, we learned at the beginning today that bricks in and of themselves are not necessarily mukta because you can use them to sit on, but if they're arranged in rows showing that you intend to actually use them for building, then they're mukta. So in this case, that was the situation. These bricks were laid out showing that they're going to be used for building. But Amar l'Talmidiv, so Rebbe says to his Talmidim, Tzu'u v'chishvu, go think about them, have in mind that we're going to be using them to sit on Shabbos, Kadesh Nation, Alein Lamacher, that way we'll be allowed to sit on them tomorrow. Now, to actually sit on them, it doesn't really matter whether they're mukta, but we're talking about they're going to want to move them around to get them in a comfortable position, to lay them out in a way that they can sit, near each other and then listen to Rebbe, etc. So you need to think about them in order to prevent them from being mukta. V'loyitzrichon Rebbe Lamaisa. So Rab Dimi or Rab Zera is saying in the name of Rab Chanina that Rebbe did not require them to actually do a maisa. Just thinking about it was enough. But Rab Yechanan omeit srichan Rebbe lemaisa. Rab Yechanan says that Rebbe did actually require them to do some kind of maisa to these bricks. So my omelahu. So according to that version, what did Rebbe tell them? What did they need to do in order to make these bricks usable on Shabbos? Rab Ami omatsuva limdu omelahu. So now we have Rab Ami says he told them just go and arrange them in order. Go arrange. In other words, Rab Ami is saying the point is that there's no maisa that you could do to these bricks that would make them more usable to sit on than they were before. Or maybe the bricks didn't even belong to them, so they couldn't do any maisa. All they could do is just put them in before Shabbos in the positions where you want them to be on Shabbos. So in other words, they're going to remain mukta since there's no maisa that you can do to them. That fits with what we said about Rabba's version of the stone being used as a cover of the barrel. You didn't do a maisa to it; you only designated it. Therefore, it remains mukta. So the same thing over here. You only designated the bricks. Therefore, they're going to remain mukta. The only thing you can do is just lay them out before Shabbos in the positions that you want them to be on Shabbos in order to sit on them. No, not make them round. Well, right, like make them in a semicircle or whatever, yeah, but not actually do any maisa to the bricks themselves, like, for example, smoothing them or whatever. But Rav Asi, almost sort of shashful, Rav Asi says that what Rebbe told them was go clean off the stones from the dirt on them. That's considered enough of a maisa to make them into a keli. So we see that according to Rav Asi, just a small maisa, like in that case, rubbing off the dirt off them, or in our case, taking the stone and putting it on top of the barrel, is enough to be a maisa. Okay, Itmar. So now we have a further discussion on that. What was going on? What happened over here? So the version we had so far is that there were bricks over there. Rabbi Yossi ben Shol, I'm a Sava Shokota Sava. Rabbi Yossi ben Shol says, actually, it wasn't bricks. It was a pile of beams for building. They pile up beams so that they don't warp or whatever. So the same thing. The question was, they want to be able to sit on them on Shabbos. So the question is, what we need to do with them before Shabbos. Rabbi Yechin meant to make them, they're not mukta. Rabbi Yechin ben Shol, I'm a Goshish Shosfina Hava. Rabbi Yechin ben Shol says, it was actually the sounding pole of a boat. Boats in those times used to often go in shallow water, and even nowadays you have like canoes or barges or whatever, go in shallow water. So what they would have is they would have somebody would stand at the front of the boat holding a long stick, which they would stick into the water to see how deep it is. So before the boat gets ahead of it, they would use this long stick to test how deep is the water ahead, can the boat go there? It's called a gosha shol sfina. So Rabbi Yossi ben Shol's version is that was what was on the ground over there, so they wanted to make it not mukta. So what's the difference? Mando amagoshish koshik and saber, the version Rabbi Yechon ben Shol that says that this happened with the sounding pole, he would agree all the more so with the kodesh that it's possible to sit on them on Shabbos, and that you can have in mind before Shabbos that they won't be mukta, that you're going to sit on them, and then you're allowed to. Because the beams are less likely to be mukta machnes chesor and kiss than the sounding pole. Because the sounding pole is more likely. You may want to keep it from getting bent, because you need it to be straight in order for it to do its job. But if we say that you're allowed to do that, you're allowed to have in mind before Shabbos that you're going to sit on it, and then you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, and it's not considered mukta machnas chesaron kis, all the more so when it comes to beams. Umanda Omer Saver. Now, on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi ben Shol's version that it was talking about beams, Ava Goshush Kafir Alei, he would say that no, the Goshush, a person is particularly makbid on. And even Reb Shimon, therefore, Rashi says, would agree, it's mukta machnas chesor and kis. It would be like a shchita knife or the other things that we talked about the other day, where you would never use them for any other purpose because you don't want them to get damaged. So therefore, so just having in mind before Shabbos that you're going to sit on it would not be enough to take away that status. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Zmurda Sheik Shura Chula, we said if you have a branch tied to a jug, then you're allowed to fill up water with the jug on Shabbos, implying shura ein loik shura loy. So only if it's tied to the jug, not if it's not tied. Lema masnisin loik Reb Shimon Gamliel. Would that mean our Mishnah is not like Reb Shimon Gamliel? D'tanya, we learned in a brisa. Charoyas shel dekel shegodran la'etzim, hard branches from a palm tree, which originally you chopped off the palm tree intending to use them for firewood. V'nimlach aleihem liyeshiva. Later on, you decided you want to use them to sit on. Tzrichin tzorich likshur. You need to tie them together to show before Shabbos that you're planning to sit on them. Reb Shimon Gamliel ein tzorich likshur. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you don't need to. So by the same token over here, you have this branch. It has, let's say, a bent. It has, let's say, a hook, a natural hook on the end of it that you can use to hold on to the jug. According to Reb Shimon Gamliel, that should be enough to use it to fill up with on Shabbos. Why is the Mishnah saying it has to be tied on, which is an actual major maisa? The answer is Amar Reb Sheshes, Afilu Temer Reb Shimon Gamliel. Our Mishnah could even be like Reb Shimon Gamliel, Hocha Ma'askin B'mchoberes Be'oviha, because the case in our Mishnah could be talking about where the branch is still attached to the grapevine. So only if it's tied to only if you tied that branch, that attached branch to the jug, then you're allowed to fill up with it on Shabbos. Otherwise, usually you're not allowed to use plants, and you're not allowed to use attached plants on Shabbos. You're not allowed to climb trees on Shabbos, for example. So it would be the same thing. So the question is, still, so how does it help if it's tied? You're still using something which is mechubal karka. The answer is lamata migimel. We're talking about where the branch is within three tefachim of the ground. So you're talking about, let's say, Rashi says it's a very shallow body of water. So you're able to use a branch that's within three tefachim of the ground. Things within three tefachim of the ground on a tree are not considered part of the tree. They're considered part of the ground. The Gemara tells us in Erevin, for example, that the roots of a tree, let's say, that are within three tefachim of a ground, you're allowed to sit on them on Shabbos. You don't have to climb the tree, but you're allowed to sit on the roots that are within three tefachim from the ground. Rav Ashi Yamar Filo Tema B'Tloshet. Rav Ashi says you don't even need that. You could even be talking about the branches detached, and the reason it needs to be tied, even according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, Gzeira Shema Yiktoim, because we make a Gzeira, because otherwise he may cut it to the right size. A grapevine branch is soft. It's easy to cut. It's easy to get to the right size. So therefore, you might do that on Shabbos, and that would for sure be a malacha of Makom Patish. So therefore, if it's tied to the Zmoda, meaning you already have it the right size, then you're allowed to use it on Shabbos. But if not, then you may decide that you need to cut it to the right size to draw the water, and then that would be also. So that's why the Mishnah would be saying you need to cut it. You need to tie it. Okay.